This is the Future Great City podcast from NextSTL.com. I'm Alex Eamon. Today, we're talking to Sean Spencer, Executive Director of Tower Grove Neighborhoods Community Development Corporation, an organization which supports responsible community-based development in the neighborhoods surrounding Tower Grove Park. All right, welcome to the Future Great City podcast by NextSTL.com. Our sponsor today is Space Architects. You can find them at spacestl.com, and you should check it out. They do a lot of pretty cool stuff, mainly in St. Louis City and around the area. But today we have Sean Spencer, the Executive Director of the Tower Grove Neighborhoods Community Development Corporation, or the ED of the TGNCDC. All right, so that's a neighborhood association that covers Shaw, primarily Tower Grove South, Southwest Garden, and maybe some edges of some other neighborhoods. So it's a nonprofit that works to improve the quality of the Shaw neighborhood and surrounding areas. And I'll let Sean kind of explain that, because it's the organization has changed recently, and there have been a couple different community corporations that have come together to form a larger group.
That's correct. Alex, thanks for having me today. This is an awesome opportunity to kind of spread the word about our organization and what we're trying to accomplish. Just a slight correction, we aren't actually a neighborhood association. We're a community development corporation, mm-hmm. and it's important to distinguish the two. Neighborhood associations are really membership-based. They're a place where people can gather to make decisions on neighborhoods, to be able to influence or to be able to gather information about crime and other safety issues, developments in the area, where our organization is primarily grant-funded, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. But we're actually changing kind of our formula. We are an organization that's flexible. We're an organization that has capacity. We have staff to tackle issues. And we've been in the neighborhoods for over 30 years. And just a little bit of background on our organization. Originally, there was between 30 and 40 CDCs set up in the 1970s. There was about $35 million in community block grant funds that were dedicated to these neighborhood place-based organizations that were dedicated to bringing back kind of urban renewal projects. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to state, you know, we're on the ground, we're block by block. We understand what our community wants. We ask, we align, and we act. And one of the things that has changed over the years is the decrease and the decline in funding for our types of organizations. So just in the last few years, we've seen a decline of about 10 to 15% per year. And as I mentioned, from $35 million in the 1970s to about $17 million in 2015.
So a decline in real dollars.
In real dollars. Yeah. And these are, in addition, it's not a situation where there's automatic privilege. Now it's a very transparent process to acquire these funds. So it's opened up those funds to to many more organizations.
So until very recently, the city received a lump sum that they divided equally, basically, right? Among
it wasn't necessarily equally mm-hmm. because a lot of those CDBG funds would go towards, commercial SLDC, LRA, other right. city functions that needed, cutting the grass, demoing buildings. Mm-hmm. And then basically what was left would be, basically split up between the right. wards.
And I think what's important is, if some people don't know, and I conflate, and shouldn't, the neighborhood associations and development corporation things, because in St. Louis there's some interesting overlap sometimes. Sometimes there's one, sometimes there's the other, sometimes it's not clear which one's which. And so, and I lived here in the neighborhood where we're recording, the Forest Park Southeast, and there was never a strong neighborhood association, but there was a very strong development corporation, and it kind of served as the gatekeeper for community input. So it's an interesting mix in St. Louis, and what I find particularly interesting is you are on the ground doing community development in a sense in the absence of a larger citywide effort, right? So there's not a lot of proactive planning and development from the city, and so that kind of goes down to the community development level, and organizations like yours are the ones, planning commercial districts or infill housing and that kind of thing. Is that's
accurate?
Right?
And your point about the CDCs and their different operations for us as Tower Grove Neighborhoods, just a brief background, we did combine the Southwest Garden Housing Corporation, the Grand Oak Hill Corporation, Community Corporation, and the Shaw Neighborhood Housing Corporation into Tower Grove Neighborhoods Community Development Corporation. And this was an effort to be able to leverage our ability to go to banks and look for other funding. Mm-hmm. We increased the service area to almost 3 miles from 0.5 miles. We increased the number of residents that we serve from about 6,000 to 30,000. Mm-hmm. So we're just in a better position to help make bigger decisions. Right. And when you talk about...
And so, no, this is what's interesting is you're covering close to 30,000 people, and yet you're in some ways a small, you know, community development corporation. But if you look across, you know, in St. Louis, we look at the 90 municipalities in St. Louis County. And I think, you know, 30,000, you're working in an area larger than probably 85 of those municipalities, right? You're kind of running, not running, but you're helping develop a city within the city, right?
That's a great way to look at it, Alex. And if you look at Glendale and Webster, the total population mm-hmm. is about the same population that we service, but right. the area of Webster versus our area is, you know, a quarter.
So. When Kirkwood's about that size, University right. City is 30,000. So
that all have their really planning departments. They all have, you know, right. the supportive services. So right. this is where that relationship between the people that are on the ground and representing mm-hmm. the needs of the community from the community works closely with the mayor's office and with the city right. of St. Louis to get the planning
right. Not, and not to say they're not supportive, but they're not proactive in a way. So they're responsive and supportive, but not they're not sending development plans your way.
Not at this point, but mm-hmm. they're really interested in what we've been able to accomplish up to this mm-hmm. point, and they want to be able to use the plan, like the framework and vision plan that we put together just last year and recently mm-hmm. released, to be able to say that there's community support for, you know, better access to Tower Grove Park, or to right. you know, for more affordable housing and core areas that we're targeting.
All right, so it's I think a lot of people certainly are familiar with the Shaw area, the Tower Grove South area, Tower Grove Park for sure. But let's talk about the neighborhood. You're in an interesting place. Neighborhood developed early 1900s, late 1800s. Missouri Botanical Garden to one side, Tower Grove Park, hundreds of acres of amazing parkland to the other side. Commercial district, bounded by an interstate. You know, what's going on? How do you characterize your neighborhood? But in the end, it's a very, very residential neighborhood, despite you have these regional amenities kind of in the middle of it.
Well, when you look at community development, we kind of break it off into two different sectors. One is a distressed area that needs comprehensive community development from the ground up and a lot of planning. The other is middle markets. And we really consider ourselves in that middle market. We've got some areas and nodes of strength, but we also have severe areas of need as well. And that's kind of where we target. But when we're looking at our service area, which is Shaw, Tower Grove South, and Southwest Garden neighborhoods, we have multiple commercial districts. We have wonderful amenities, world-class botanical gardens. So we have these things that we can build off of. South Grand is another great example of the reasons why somebody may want to live in our neighborhoods. So it's our goal to really drive public and private investment to make it even more appealing for somebody to make a decision. Well, I'm looking in Clayton or Webster, but I'm also looking mm-hmm. in Shaw and Tower Grove South. And this is an inclusive community that you know, I think that the mindset is changing.
Well, I think what else is interesting in that area is I think, at least rhetorically, among people in St. Louis who are into kind of urbanism and the revitalization of the city, I think a lot of people have looked at the Tower Grove area as, in a sense, finished. Like, oh, that's expensive and it's beautiful and it's shiny and it's new, so why don't we all go work in this other neighborhood that's struggling more? Right. But, you know, some of what people might not know, and this is, there are lots of different ways to look at this, but Southwest Garden neighborhood lost 18% of its population in the last census from 2000 to 2010. Tower Grove South lost about 10%, and that's in a neighborhood of 13,000. There's 1,000 vacant housing units there. Shaw lost 17% or 1,400 people in the last decade. So, and that points to a couple of things. One is that we know walking through those neighborhoods that, you know, vacant buildings are being renovated and sold for $300,000, $400,000, and there are $600,000 mansions on some of the big streets. There are wine bars and gourmet restaurants. I mean, there's a lot of vitality going on, right. but obviously the neighborhood's changing and there's real vacancy. It's not just, it's not that speculative developers are sitting on 100 homes just waiting to redevelop them when they get expensive, right? So how do you view that mix? How do you celebrate kind of this vitality and the energy and the excitement and the real need. And I don't know, I guess make sure people understand, don't bypass Shaw or think there aren't redevelopment opportunities. And, you know,
right. And that's an important point to make. And if you look at on our website at www.towergrovecdc.org, you can find our framework and vision plan. And that really outlines how we took a really comprehensive look at the three neighborhoods, because there's significant opportunities for reinvestment in the area south of McDonald down to Chippewa. Mm-hmm. Also in the Shaw neighborhood on Detente and Shaw Boulevard, which is part of the reason why we worked on the infrastructure improvements on the Shaw Boulevard Improvement Program. So we got the new crosswalks, we have new LED lights coming, we've got a new ADA crossings. Mm-hmm. So we've got some public investment that hopefully will drive more private investment. And ultimately, it's all these combination of things that can really propel a neighborhood. And I'll tell you, when I started 6 years ago, it wasn't let's bypass Shaw. It was, why do we have 70 vacant, you know, single family and multifamily buildings and nobody's doing anything with them? Mm-hmm. And it was our job to go out and sell the neighborhood, provide market data and research to show investors that these are good investments for you. Here are the tools. Let me walk you through the process. Let me give you comps. Let me educate you on the historic and state and federal tax credits. Mm-hmm. And by doing that over a period of time, you do get to an inflection point. And I'll be completely honest. It's a myriad of things that come together to make a neighborhood work. And it's, one is making sure you have investments and that people are there and they're committed to their neighborhood, a strong neighborhood association, supportive alder people and politicians, a very effective NSO, a community development corporation.
And that's the neighborhood stabilization office,
that's right?
A city employee who connects the neighborhood with the city and services. Yeah. And
does the building code inspections and that sort of thing. And then on top of that, it's schools. And, you know, and then that crime and safety component. So those are all, if all those things align, you can really do things pretty quickly.
So you're solving all of those, right?
Every day. And that's what I want to make sure that I'm clear is that, you know, we have a real estate history. So, you know, our landlord training programs, our real estate inventory, mm-hmm. our development facilitation, our affordable housing development and market rate housing development is all basically revolves around that. But part of our strategic plan is to bring in these other organizations that also provide services that may not be as connected to the neighborhood to be able to provide a more well-rounded, you know, service to the neighborhoods that we have.
Yeah, and you mentioned a couple of the development sites, and I do want to get to that. But one thing I spend time thinking about, I think people are interested in, is how, you know, what happens to areas that aren't served by a development corporation? And those seem to be the places that are kind of falling through the cracks, and we see... Or business associations, and we've written about the MoDOT plan, the Department of Transportation plan on Gravelway, where they kind of came out and said, you know, it's a state-owned road through our city, and they were going to close a bunch of streets. There was no business association. It spanned, I think, 7 wards, so there was no, you know, there was no group kind of planning that area, and they've kind of had not a knee-jerk reaction, but in response to this, they've kind of a plan has blossomed and a neighborhood group has formed. But it's across all kinds of jurisdictions. And what's been pointed out to me in that process is that if you don't have a neighborhood development corporation, there's not really an effective way to get grant money for, you know, to revitalize a retail strip or to do something else. So I guess if that leads to a question, it's you've expanded greatly your footprint. Is there, in your mind, what's next in terms of the city? Should the whole city be covered by development corporations? Does the city take on more of a role in some of these areas? What happens?
That's the great question. And, you know, we did mention earlier that there, you know, was 30 or 40 at one point. There's 19 now. We all provide different levels of service. We know the work that we do does work, and you have to have good leadership. You've got to have a strong volunteer board. But in the areas that aren't serviced, we've got to find a way to get them serviced. And whether it's, you know, mergers, if it's developing new organizations, we have to have the on-the-ground presence in the neighborhoods. You know, one example may be Gravelway Park. And, you know, the housing stock is fantastic. It's close to transportation. It's close to South Grand and knows the strength. It should probably be doing better than it is right now, and it is getting better. But you can really accelerate that if you put more resources on the ground. And right now, you look at it, and it basically comes down to the neighborhood association and the alder person, and the alder person's one person, and the neighborhood association's all volunteers. So you need people there, you know.
Well, really it'll be interesting. We're on a countdown to, what, 8 more years, I think, until we go from 28 wards in the city to 14. And then you might see some more, for better or worse, alignment of development corporations and alder people. And, right. You know, when you have a project on Gravois, maybe it spans 3 wards instead of 7. And exactly. Things start to simplify. But we can, that's a whole other, we'll cover that on other podcasts because it's an interesting subject. And we have 8 years to get to that. So maybe there's no rush.
Well, I also feel like there could be some memorandum of understandings with other community development corporations. Mm-hmm. Say, you know, Park Central does events really well, so we really need events in Bevo, so you'll right. do that, and you know, maybe we'll step in and help with the real estate inventory or mm-hmm. be able to use the capacity that we already have in the system and just expand it to the areas of need.
Got you. Well, let's get to some of the development opportunities. I know there've been you help promote development, you advertise opportunities that you don't necessarily own, but you also own buildings.
Right.
So why don't you talk about just, I think there are at least 2 or 3 examples of buildings you own that you've put out RFPs for, asking for development ideas, and I'll let you take it from there.
I appreciate it. Yeah, that was one of the things that when I first started, we had a budget of about $80,000. And the one thing I knew we could accomplish was being able to sell the neighborhoods and bring developers to the areas and mm-hmm. show them opportunities, let them understand the market and kind of let them go. They prove themselves on one, maybe we give them another, and it just goes from there. Well, now, because we're a combined organization, we have the financial capacity to go out and buy some target properties in addition to building a rental portfolio, so we really can focus on the worst of the worst properties in the areas that we know have the most need. And one of the projects right now that we have is 4175 Shaw. So this is one that I drove past for 8 years and just wondered what was going on with it. Got into my position and kept my eye on the tax sales, and that's another benefit some of these CDCs can have. Went down to the auction at the sheriff's auction and was able to purchase that property. It's a block down from the Missouri Botanical Gardens. It is an old gas station, so it had tanks. It had remediation issues that needed to be handled. So over the last 2 years, we were able to get some funding for the Phase 1 and Phase 2 reports, get $160,000 Brownfields grant to finish that cleanup, so that'll be done in the next couple of months. And now we're looking for a new use for that building, hopefully that will be that will meet the desires of the community, and mm-hmm. we'll work with the neighborhood association to make sure that it's something that's a good fit. So
this is a good example of how the development corporation steps in when there's basically a market failure, when you have an empty gas station and the risk is kind of unknown, right? You have tanks, you have remediation issues, and private investors aren't touching it.
It's a 2 to 3 year process, and you never know what kind of liability you may have. As a not-for-profit, we can go in and we can get tests done for free. We can hold it, you know, over a period of time until it's ready for redevelopment.
Yeah. And this is a gas station that was built in, what, 1924? There That's are a few right. of them kind of littered around St. Louis. Olio, the wine bar, took a similar gas station and turned it into a pretty attractive, successful place, right? Just a couple blocks from the Shaw neighborhood. So if anybody out there has ideas for a 1920s gas station, right? They call you. Is that what
Absolutely.
All right. And then there's a building that was a theater and then a market and now has been closed for a while. That's not too far away from the gas station, right?
Right. That's 3901 Shaw. Mm-hmm. That is the Shaw Place Theater. It was one of the largest and first theaters east or west of the Mississippi. It held 1,100 people at one point, and it was really the go-to.
That building doesn't look that big.
I know. It's 7,500 square feet.
The seats were very. People were smaller. Close, right? The seats were smaller. Maybe that works. Now it's about 300 people.
So that actually is owned by the city of St. Louis, and what we do in these circumstances is that we help facilitate the development by promoting that development opportunity and then filtering potential options to the city to help with their decision-making
And describe the building if you can, because I think if anyone's aware of it, and maybe most people probably passed it by and didn't give it a lot of thought, it was a convenience store, basically, a small market for a long time. And I don't think I knew until, you know, a couple months ago that it was ever a theater. It didn't look like a theater. You wouldn't have guessed it was a theater. What's inside? What's the building look like?
It actually has a steel arc. If you look at take a step away from the building, you'll mm-hmm. see that there's an arch in the roof. So it's got, you know, 40-foot, 50-foot ceilings. Yes. It's got beautiful cornice work that we were able to see by taking out the drop ceiling. it's just, it's a wide open span right now. There are some historic details that will be great to bring back at some point.
So you're doing a concert venue with a 3 a.m. liquor license, right?
Would have to be decided by the neighborhood and the neighborhood association, but there's some ideas, and it's, you know, one thing to understand when you look at developments of this size is that it's really difficult to finance. Mm-hmm. You have to have an experienced owner. You've got to have somebody that's dedicated to following through on the proposals. And it's not just you just put it out in the universe and say, tomorrow we'll have 10 proposals.
So what's the process? I mean, what's the process of community input? So if you get a proposal and it's well-financed and well-planned and a known developer, and they say the 3 a.m. liquor license is a bad idea. That's what they do here in the Grove, right? But whatever they want to do, what's that process in terms of you receiving, the development corporation receiving responses and then going to the neighborhood?
So in the case of 3901 Shaw and 4175 Shaw, we went through a survey process at the beginning and took a gauge on what people wanted to see primarily on those corners. A lot of people wanted to save the building. They wanted to, I think it was 79% wanted to have a commercial use, an active commercial use to the properties. So we'll get those proposals in. We'll actually get the proposals in for 3901. We'll get it in through our organization at 4175. And then we'll start talking and engaging with the neighborhood association. And ultimately, you know, it's their support and, you know, what they want to see and what they'd like.
So in theory, you could bring to the neighborhood association two or three proposals and they could say, well, this is the one we like. And it may not be the highest sale price or the highest development cost. It really leans on what the neighborhood wants there.
On both instances, I think that's the case. It's not about the price of the building. It's about what you're bringing to the neighborhood. And it's challenging. We brought a couple of development opportunities for one lot to the neighborhood, and it's just part of the process.
Another old repair station? Is this what we're talking about? Yeah. So you had a microbrewery that was interested. You had a cafe with a residence, and so is there any update on that? I've written about it. I don't know if there's anything you can share, but
I basically follow up on it every 2 weeks, and the last couple months the financing has been completed. We're just waiting for the final, the shovel to get into the ground.
Well, it's a great project too, in the sense that you're saving a really nasty building, which those are the best. The building we're sitting in at here at Space Architects was nasty. I lived in the neighborhood when they renovated it and they bought it in 2008, moved in 2009, and I wouldn't have missed it. It's a one-story building that literally the last third of the building was sinking into the ground. There was a big crack in the side. It was a total disaster. So it's really cool to see those buildings come back and have them be, repurposed. So.
And the key is, do you have a developer that's willing and able to be able to complete it? And that's that's the story.
All right. Well, let's talk about one other big project. I think that is moving forward in the next month, maybe this month, is the Detente project by UIC. Right. So that's been through three or four different iterations, at least three developers in the last decade. Tell us what's planned for that site. And the site is faces Interstate 44, which is a bit of a challenging site because you're looking at an elevated interstate on top of an earth berm, I guess. You're looking at a hill with an interstate on top of it.
Right. And I'll tell you, challenging is the right word. And when I came into this position 5 or 6 years ago, we had already had two or three failed attempts to develop that site as single-family properties. Originally it was a mix of mixed use, two and four family and single family buildings. And we really were excited about the opportunity to bring a perspective to the development site that we hadn't heard and seen before, and that was the Detente Commons, where they were going to run the homes parallel to the street and be able to kind of,
It's kind of a courtyard, and there's some precedent for that in the neighborhood, right? You have Hodes Court and some of these others that were built as like a garden community where they have a kind of a shared front sidewalk, but the houses are oriented towards each other and not the street.
Exactly, so. And the big. We really hope we'd have more success on the front end with people just kind of jumping on board. But after about a year of marketing, the developer wasn't able to secure anybody to purchase the first couple houses. And when you do a project like that, you have to realign all the sewers and all the utilities, and there's a massive cost associated with that. So basically, they went back to the drawing board. And I have to give UIC credit because you know, a lot of developers in the past have just walked away from the site and, you know, gone on and done other things. And they really gave a fresh look to it. I think they talked to other real estate professionals in the area. They did a market study, and they figured out, you know, what would be the highest and best use for that land given its location. And they came up with a plan to incorporate 8 single-family houses as townhouses. Mm-hmm. So it's basically half of what they originally proposed. And then putting up 2 mid-sized multifamily buildings, one's at 36 units and one's at 24 units. Mm-hmm.
And it's not so different than the density of if you go down Shaw or some of the other kind of larger thoroughfares that have 3 and 4-story apartment buildings, right?
It's very similar
scale to the neighborhood.
It's similar scale, and frankly, I think they went back and looked at the design and really tried to create something that had a little more of a historic feel. Mm-hmm. And something that the neighborhood would get behind. And we've had a lot of positive responses.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I would say, you know, 90% of the people kind of look at it and think, great, you know, it's been a vacant lot for a decade or more. And so, right. and the development looks good. But what's funny is that the negative responses span from, it's so expensive, no one's going to live there and it's going to fail. To it's really expensive, it's going to be really successful and change the neighborhood.
Right.
You know, so, and I don't know if you have a perspective on, you know, it's a new building, and my perspective in some ways, as you know, having been a city resident and looked for either a new house or something different and not finding it, is that we need a real mix of housing options. So, right. You know, I look at something like in this neighborhood, there's a development called Aventura, which is my least favorite development, maybe for, you know, anyway. If you go on nextstl.com and search Aventura, you can see what I think about that. But it's been successful in terms of it being filled, because what you have is you have a certain group of people who want to live in a brand new apartment with a pool and easy parking, maybe, or, you know, close to the medical center. And there simply wasn't anything available. And so, you know, when I moved to St. Louis, I lived in a 1908 studio apartment, which was kind of fun. You know, it was cheap. It was also kind of gross, you know? And so, so there's a market for new buildings. And so I think it's probably a good mix. And these neighborhoods that you represent are, there are some vacancies, largely empty buildings, not empty lots, but there's not a lot of opportunity for development in a sense, right? The neighborhood is pretty intact.
It is intact. And, you know, we have all, the neighborhood is really has a variety of incomes, and that's one of the diversity of the neighborhood is one of the reasons why people move there. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who works in real estate in these neighborhoods on a daily basis, I agree with you. You know, there isn't really, in my mind, enough of the product that is a walk-in closet and the, mm-hmm. an in-unit washer and dryer. That is fresh and clean, and yeah. You know, it's, you know, a couple of years old.
And there's some, you know, you can gut a house and make it virtually new, but anything short of that, and you're just dealing, you know, I lived in an 1897 home and now in a 1929 home, and there's right. just crap to deal with, you know, like right. you just can't get around it, no matter how well it's been redone, and you discover switches that don't work and electrical boxes that don't work and right. you know, cast iron pipes under your basement floor and just junk that you have to deal with, right? So, so I can certainly see the appeal. Well, I think we're gonna. Did I miss anything? Is there anything you're excited about that you want to add?
There's another development mm-hmm. in the Shaw neighborhood, which is the Sherman School.
Sure.
And that is hopefully will start in the next 6 to 12 months.
And tell us that's a historic public school building, probably a century old. And
in the center of the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and that'll be some additional market rate apartments.
Okay. And how many units are they squeezing in there?
I think they're squeezing in 30.
I say squeeze in.
36. Yeah, 36 units. Okay. And they'll be on-site parking. And yeah. it was pretty well received by the people that have been That's in great. Front of the couple of presentations. So
Very
we're
cool.
excited about that. We're really excited about the Wedge. And I have to plug that because sure. in our strategic plan, yeah. this is an area we're going to spend a lot of time in. And that's Gravois to Chippewa and Grand to Grand. Mm-hmm. This is an area where if you go, you know, south of McDonald to Chippewa, the median income is about $22,000. And in the Tower Grove Heights, it's about $55,000. So mm-hmm. within a couple blocks, you have a really a decrease in earnings there.
And yeah, I've always thought that the divide, and this goes back to when I first moved here and exploring the neighborhood, was Utah. So Utah is kind of a boulevard, right? Is that
That's correct.
It's kind of almost a demarcation of the south side of the neighborhood. And there's just a difference in housing stock and things like that on the other side. So the triangle is or the wedge is south of that area.
It's
correct?
Just south of, yep. south of that area. It's got great bones, wonderful housing stock, mm-hmm. you know, 18 to 2200 square foot, two sure. families that are easily convertible. And like I said before, it's close to transportation, access to jobs, mm-hmm. shopping, all these things that people want to live around. But there's a perception of safety, and there's a, you know, there's you know, some need for reinvestment. So,
and what that's neighborhood is that? What's the
that is Tower Grove South?
That is still
and that's
Tower Grove
a great
South.
Point that yeah. you just made because
well, there you go.
That's how we want to try to market yeah. it. This is still Tower Grove South, just yeah. because it's on the other side.
So this
of the
is
driveway.
What's this is what's interesting that it's a we have 79 neighborhoods in the city of St. Louis, which is and these were all set. You know, within the last 20, 30 years, I think they were made official. And so maybe that's my next effort is to go through some of these neighborhoods and fix some of these names. So we have I'll save that. But yeah, some of the names don't make sense. And we have, you know, Benton Park and Benton Park West, but then you don't have there's no Lafayette Square East. There's,
right.
I mean, it's just in a sense it's arbitrary, but it carries a lot of meaning, right? Like I just assumed Tower Grove South stopped, somewhere.
And it should
it stop somewhere.
It should be part of the marketing effort, and there's a yeah. lot of work to be done on Gravelway, and like you said, the Greater Gravelway yeah. initiative, and that's going to be, you know, mm-hmm. it's going to be wonderful to work with them because we have two plans that can intersect sure. and then go after some money. That's one great. Real quick, we're mm-hmm. doing another project in Southwest Garden that's at 1817 Alfred. It's an old drug house. Project 87 got shut down, mm-hmm. And we're renovating that as an affordable house at about $115,000. So we will take the worst properties and pay a little bit more than yeah. we should because we know that it's going to help that block.
Well, and Southwest Garden is a great neighborhood, and I, you know, people are more familiar with the other neighborhoods we've discussed, but Southwest Garden largely lies west of Kings Highway, correct? So north of Northampton, south of the hill. There's some industrial warehouse use there, so it's not as cohesive maybe as Shaw and some of these other places, but it's great. And then there is a section that obviously is west of the Botanical Garden, east of Kings Highway as well. So it's split by Kings Highway, and it's a little right. disjointed in a way, exactly. but it's an interesting place. So, all right, well, the last thing we ask is, this is the Future Great City podcast. So what will it take for St. Louis to be a future great city?
Well, I think the wheels are already turning, Alex. And, you know, I think the mentality of the people that grew up here and may have grown up in the suburbs understand the vitality and the vibrancy that the city offers. And people want that walkable and bikeable communities. And they want to be able to walk down to a coffee shop and have a coffee or go down and have mm-hmm. a beer down in a sandwich down the street. So we have all these wonderful little commercial areas, and we've got an explosion of job creation in the Cortex area. So we really feel like in our service area, being a workforce housing and being able to drive more people that can be dedicated through the neighborhood associations and other volunteer operations are going to continue to build the city up into a city that's hopefully desirable to everybody in this country as a potential relocation.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Sean. And again, everybody can check out the Tower Grove CDC at towergrovecdc.org. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
This has been the Future Great City Podcast on nextstl.com. Thanks for joining us. Be informed, be engaged, be part of what's next. Nextstl.com.